I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rabbi Capers Funeh, the chief rabbi of the Hebrew Israelite Board of Rabbis. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Maven on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. We have at long last completed the fall festivals of Jewish tradition with Simchat Torah finishing up last week. While the month of remarkable Jewish celebrations and observances are wonderful, they are also exhausting, not least for rabbis and cantors, of which, you know, I am both. But I have to share a final story from this extreme festival cycle, a Simchat Torah tale for the year 5777, from last Monday night's celebration of the holiday of Torah at my own Temple Emmanuel. On Simchat Torah, we complete reading this central book of our faith, the foundation of all Western religion, by chanting the last sentences of the book of Deuteronomy and then begin reading it all over again, chanting the first verses of the book of Genesis, the creation of the universe, demonstrating our love for Torah. To emphasize that and to make the holiday really fun, we circle the sanctuary seven times in a ceremony called the Hakafot or Hakufos. These Hakafot are always accompanied by songs about Torah, by marching all the synagogue's Torahs around the sanctuary and all the children present marching right along, waving flags. These perambulations, the Hakafot, become more and more celebratory as we go on, until by the time we reach the seventh Hakafah, there's real revelry taking place. In Temple Emmanuel, we had a fabulous klezmer celebration, great joyous music, full-on dancing, singing, lots of fun. Reminds me of when I first arrived at Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati as a third-year rabbinical student long ago. I was to become the cantor in the chapel there, but for Simchat Torah, I was just a congregant. I sat through the first few Hakafot, the parades with the Torah, listening to dull, plodding songs. Finally, I turned to the dean, Rabbi Ken Ehrlich, and asked him what was going on. Like me, he's descended from Eastern European Jews who do their Simchas Torah singing and dancing with great enthusiasm and energy, a kind of wanton celebration of Torah. Ken explained that when he first came to the college, the Hakafot for Simchat Torah were actually done in a slow, stately procession accompanied by plodding organ music. And he himself had turned to a professor and asked, "It's Simchas Torah. How come they're marching and not dancing?" The professor answered, "These are German Jews. They are dancing." Anyway, that's not the story I wanted to tell you this morning. This one happened last Monday night during the Hakafot, as the Torah circling was really getting going. We were on the sixth Hakafah, and I'd called up almost everyone who wanted to carry a Torah, but I noticed a very active congregant who hadn't yet come up. He was sitting quietly at his seat, or standing quietly. I called him up by name, and slowly he made his way up, took a Torah, and joined in the festivities, carrying it around the congregation. But later that night, I received an email from him with the rest of the story. "I'm sorry I didn't come up sooner, but I've been working on losing weight," he said, "and my clothes are much looser. As I sat there on Simchat Torah, I realized I'd forgotten to put on a belt. My trousers were so loose that when I stood up, I had to hold them up with one hand. That made it impossible to use two hands to hold the Torah, so I stayed at my seat. But then you called me up publicly, and I had no choice to come forward. So I told the gabbai, the guy who passes out the Torahs, that if I took the Torah, my pants would fall down, and my boxers would flash the whole congregation, changing the character of the whole service." He kindly said, "Well, that'll make YouTube," but then offered to give me the Torah and walk slowly behind me, holding up my pants so they didn't fall off. And that is how I completed my Hakafah on Simchat Torah. Man, that is just too good a story for me to have made it up. And so, for a final playout for this fun Jewish holiday season, now in our rearview mirror, here's a bit of klezmer music from the great Giora Feidman, probably the best klezmer clarinetist ever. That was a klezmer celebration melody in honor of the holiday of Simchat Torah and the conclusion of the Jewish fall festival cycle last week. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is a remarkable rabbi, Capers Fanay, who was inaugurated chief rabbi of the International Hebrew Israelite Community this past summer, the largest group of black Jews in the world. Meet him when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
It's everything you wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. Temple Emmanuel's Taste of Judaism program is now in its 17th year and explores Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on Jewish spirituality, values, and community. This free introductory class taught by our rabbis is immensely popular throughout Southern Arizona. 6,000 students have enjoyed Taste to date, and you can too. In partnership with the Tucson Hebrew Academy, Taste of Judaism brings to life Jewish culture, history, rituals, and practice. It'll help you rediscover your roots or simply satisfy your curiosity about Judaism. Classes are free and open to all and include Jewish snacks. We have daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, and this year at Splendido as well. The whole family can learn at the Taste of Judaism family class, starting soon. It's free with no fees or obligations, but space is limited and pre-registration is required. Call Mila at 327-4501 or email Mila, M-I-L-A, at tetucson.org. That's Taste of Judaism, 520-327-4501.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Capers Fanay. He's the rabbi and spiritual leader of Beth Shalom B'nai Zakein Ethiopian Hebrew Congregation in Chicago. And just recently, he was inaugurated as the chief rabbi of the Hebrew Israelite community in America, a remarkable position. I should also mention, although he's a past guest of Too Jewish, you may not remember that his claim to fame in those days was also that he was Michelle Obama's cousin, and that remains the case. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning and thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the origins of the Hebrew Israelite community in America.
The origins of our particular community dates back to the early parts of the 20th century. Between 1913 and 1918 is when the community in Chicago began taking root. Rabbi Matthew, our first chief rabbi, started his congregation, Commandment Keepers, in 1919. So the community will be celebrating its centennial in year after next and the year after that, both in Chicago and in New York. The community is essentially made up originally of a lot of folks from the Caribbean, along with who made their way to cities like New York and Philadelphia and Chicago. Then they attracted a lot of African-Americans that were either in the city or coming up from various southern states and migrating up to the various cities in the north and starting the congregation, starting these Jewish congregations. The congregations are, by and large, range in practice from Orthodox to what would be termed conservative. I just like to use the label traditional, in that we observe halakha, particularly with respect to individuals who are interested in becoming part of the meat community. They have to do the prerequisite of study for a year, and thereafter I formalize a bet din and take them through the halakhic processes of becoming a part of the Jewish people.
Tell us a little bit about your own journey to this point, becoming active, becoming a rabbi, having a conservative conversion along the way.
Well, for me, I was raised in the AME Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and many years ago, I was still in high school. I was actually offered a scholarship to go to seminary to become an AME minister. But I had always been questioning. My main question was the idea and the ideal that God died or some part of God died. That troubled me greatly in my younger years, and that really essentially started me on my quest and on my journey towards Judaism. I can only tell you that it's a journey that I've been on now for well over 40 years, and it is fulfilling for me, for my family. My becoming a rabbi, I went to visit our congregations in New York for the first time in 1979, and thereupon I met my teacher, Chief Rabbi Levi Ben Levi. And we got to talking, and he said, you know, we're going to need young men to train to become rabbis to serve our community, and I think that you would be a good candidate. He said, don't answer me now. Go home. Talk to your wife. And call me in a week or two and let me know what you think about it. So I did. And my wife was in total agreement. So I enrolled in the Israelite Academy with Rabbi Levi. But living here in Chicago, I told him that there was a Jewish institution here of higher education, called Spertus College of Judaica.
Right, a great college, by the way.
It is a fantastic school. And I said, Rabbi, would you mind if I also started taking courses at Spertus as well as while I'm studying with you? He said, absolutely. He encouraged me very greatly to do that. So I also enrolled in Spertus and began taking courses in all of the various subjects of Judaica, from Jewish philosophy, Jewish history, courses on biblical law, and the whole range of Spertus's course offerings at the same time while I was studying with Rabbi Levi. Then I, being a part of the Black Jewish community, I wanted to further my affiliation with the broader Jewish community here in Chicago. So I approached a couple of rabbis here that I happen to know, and I said, you know, I know that I'm a Jew, but halakhically, that might not be the case in your eyes. I know you respect me, but I want this done from a halakhic perspective so that all of the issues or questions are removed. And so the rabbi put together a bet din. Actually, he said, do you have other rabbis that you would like to ask to be a part of the bet din? I said, certainly. I wanted to ask some of my professors at Spertus. So I did. And they were very willing to be a part of the bet din for myself and my family. And so we went through the conversion process at that time. And for me, it just calls to reverberate within me that which I felt I always was and had always was always practicing since maybe 1971, 72.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Capers Funay, not only about his own journey, but about his new role as the chief rabbi of the Hebrew Israelite community when we come back in a few moments here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Rabbi.
Quitting smoking, big part of your lives.
Yeah, it's very important. When we started this company just over 6 years ago, it was because I had a really bad cigar habit, and it was time for me to quit. We have 7 children. Our youngest just turned 8, and I wish to be around to watch them all grow up and have successful careers and family of their own.
And Pamela, it's better personally, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. I'm a non-smoker, and being with a person who smokes cigars in particular, it's much nicer. His body doesn't reek of it, his hair does not reek of it, his clothes do not smell of it, and there's no tobacco between his teeth anymore.
And you don't have to send them for extra showers or out in the rain.
No extra showers.
How can people find out more about Freedom Smoke?
You can look us up on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com or call us on our toll-free number, 1-800-705-7013. That's 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Rabbi.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, streaming us from there, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Well, finally, we're on the home stretch, just a week or so to go until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our 2016 Too Jewish Presidential Report. One of the most interesting oddities of this long presidential campaign has been the maverick efforts of a dynamic young independent candidate for president, a guy named Evan McMullen. In an environment of profound dissatisfaction with many aspects of the campaign and the current choice between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, McMullen announced his candidacy just in August, after the nominating conventions were completed. He's attracted a great deal of support in Utah, his native state, where much of a profoundly conservative electorate appears to have rejected Donald Trump with his personal and character issues. Evan McMullen is a Mormon. On October 6th, he chose a rising young political operative named Mindy Finn as his running mate. Finn is Jewish, founder and president of the group Empowered Women, a founding partner of Engage, an online digital media strategy company, and a former Twitter executive. She's Jewish, married to a Jewish guy, and the mother of 2 Jewish boys. Well, I don't know if McMullen will win Utah. Current polls show him running neck and neck with both Trump and Clinton. But if he does so, he will be the first third-party candidate to win a state in the Electoral College in 48 years. And if a Latter-day Saint with a Jewish running mate, Mindy Finn, does that, it will be a breath of fresh air in a year of truly miasmic odors emanating from the presidential race. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about your experience in Thessaloniki. You described a great deal about that, a really fascinating Jewish community, tiny now, but still vital. You spent Yom Kippur there. Tell us a little more about that.
Right. So there are a lot of differences, not only between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim, but specifically the Greek Jewish communities, plural, most of which have centralized themselves now in Athens and Thessaloniki, which have completely different rituals and traditions. One of the things I found amazing—
People should know they're not terribly close to each other, and it's hard to get around in Greece. Everything, you have to cross water, go over mountains, and so on.
Right. They're far away. Most people fly. There is a fast train these days. There used to be. It used to be like 8 or 10 hours by train or bus. But one of the things I found fascinating was, so the current major synagogue that functions and has youth programs and it seems very vibrant and lively, even though it's a community of only 2,000 or 3,000 people, has representatives from small, largely vanished Jewish communities, like the ancient Jewish community of Corfu. And Corfu for a long time was ruled by Italy. So during the services, different people in the congregation stand up and give their community's rendition of a particular song. It's not centralized on the bima or with the chazan or the rabbi or whatever. So there's a guy from Corfu who gives this beautiful Korfiot rendition of some particular prayer, which sounds very Italian. And there's a guy from Rhodes who does the same thing with the Rhodes tradition. And it's pretty amazing that there's such a diversity of traditions in this one synagogue. Also, your listeners might find interesting some of the differences in tradition, whereas we, meaning most American Jews of Ashkenazic origin, we do like raw apples dipped in honey at the time of the New Year.
Right.
They do a local variant of an old Ottoman tradition, which is depending on which country you're in. But in Greece, it's called gliko. It's like a thick jam, and it's made of chopped apples and honey and whole almonds and a couple of other things. And you eat a spoon of it, followed by ice water. And throughout the Balkans, the tradition is to greet a traveler with a long silver spoon of some form of gliko, not apples and honey, but usually cherry or plum, and then a glass of ice water to wash the dust of the journey out of your mouth. And that tradition, which is very widespread throughout the Balkans, comes from the Turks.
Oh, interesting. So it's sort of become the sweet new year comes from this
right.
Ottoman tradition.
Right. So the pre-Yom Kippur meal is not that different from what we do. But the post is, we usually do dairy and have like blintzes or smoked salmon or poached salmon, whatever.
Right. Bagels, of course.
They start with chicken soup and then do kind of beef slow braised in a lot of eggplant and some tomato, onion, garlic, whatever.
So a nice light meal.
Well, the beef is small and chunky. It's fairly light, but it's definitely a meat meal and not right. a dairy meal. And it's like totally different from what we're used to. And I have to say, thank God the synagogue had like big trays of chocolate cookies. So right at the end of the fast, on your way out, you can get a cookie and a bottle of water. Instead
to
of
break your fast and give you some energy until you can get this gigantic meal.
Exactly.
Lovely. You know, it's so interesting because we think about the religious meaning, but the cultural aspect of the holidays is so beautiful and it's really beautifully different.
Right. Also, at the end of the service, I have to say, at the end of Ne'ilah, I've never seen this anywhere else. It might exist somewhere else, but there in Thessaloniki, all the children under the age of Bar Bat Mitzvah go up to the Bima for Yigdal Elohim Chai. And they're there so that the community can look at its own future and be reassured.
It's so funny. We do that at my temple. And actually, we have a lot of those kids blow shofar at the very end for the last Kiyah Gadolah. And then, so they're up there. We didn't know that we were imitating.
Doesn't that take a lot of extra time?
No, you'd be surprised how fast kids move when they know there's a reward of, you know, a little kiddish and some challah at the end.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi non-Israel Oshrat Bariel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
So, rock and roll and vegan. I want you to explain what your topic for today.
So, you can combine them, right? When I think on a rock and roll band, I think of people who after, you know, concert will go and eat a big steak, right?
Right, right. Okay, in fact, I've had Israeli entertainers here. Like, I remember when Rami Kleinstein played at Temple Emmanuel. Mm-hmm. What did everybody in the entire band want? Steak, because in Israel, the steak is not as good as it is in America. Let's be honest. Okay.
So
the food is great, but not the steak.
So I think the message of vegan is very popular now in Israel. And, you know, it's another startup, you know. It's related to Jewish value. It's related to, you know, everything.
Sustainability.
Exactly. And then 3 years ago, a very new band, rock and roll band, three of them just happened to be vegan. Males, by the way, they're not female males, like a big, you know, tall Israeli macho, but that's really vegan values is important for them. So they incorporated in their, you know, actually Yetzirah.
Well, in their whole
creation, you
right.
know, art.
Right.
And their message is all about being vegan friendly. And the name of the band is Vegan Friendly.
Vegan Friendly.
Yeah. As an American, you probably know that there is, I think Pink Floyd have a song called The Cow or something.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
So they have something similar. I think they were inspired. One of the songs were highly inspired by this song.
By Pink Floyd. Okay.
But yes, that's about, you know, the the Israeli rock and roll and focus on the vegan. But in general, like, you know, I watched lately, I had the privilege to have spare time, and I watched, you know, an article about rock and roll and how it started. And I don't know if our audience know that the Israeli rock and roll started only 45 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was...
Late 60s.
It was very... Israel's culture was very conservative, classical music, and, you know, you couldn't play rock and roll on the... there wasn't a lot of radio stations, but I remember, like...
But there is a lot of rock and roll music, great
huge,
music.
Absolutely.
But it's, like, it was surprising to me to find out that it's only 45 years... ago that it started. So artists like, you know, Shalom Chanoch, Kaveret, Dani Bassan, Dani Sanderson, all these, you know, great, great artists started 45 years ago and created like a legendary rock and roll.
So that you don't really have geriatric rock yet in Israel, in which you have these guys that need to be
Shalom Chanoch is 70.
Okay, he looks pretty old. I agree with you.
Yeah.
So vegan rock and roll.
I think
that's a great
your
trend.
Question, Robert.
You answered my question. And
great.
You know, Israel is incredibly creative in the arts and in this case, in messaging as well. Thanks so much, Ashraf. We'll talk
you,
next
Rabbi.
Week.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John. Good morning.
Boker Tov, Boker Tov. Seems like it's been a while.
It's the first time I can say good morning without saying Chag Sameach or Shana Tova or Gvar Chatzimato or something.
Busy, busy time.
So many holidays in the past month. A lot of people think that having a Jewish educational institution is just about teaching the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And it can feel that way.
And yet there's so much more.
Absolutely. So now that you've had a month in which you had like 3-day weeks every week, pretty much, what does it feel like to begin at a Jewish day school to come back to normalcy?
Sure. So, you know, our schedule is really fascinating because we hit a peak as school starts in August, and then we get into a norm, and then we hit this other peak on a spiritual, intellectual, emotional, communal, religious level again with the holidays, and now we're coming off of that and hitting, you know, back to a more typical norm. So what is normal? You know, one of those things you kind of joke about. What's normal? So back to 5-day weeks and, you know, our routine days.
So really what is successful in teaching about Judaism is the dailiness of it. It's not just the holidays. In fact, it's probably not the holidays.
Well, the holidays are those moments where everything kind of highlights. But just like in life, to support those highlights we experience, there's everything else that happens. There are all those daily rhythms, routines, and the things that really drive us as people, the things that we're passionate about, the things that we believe in, the things we put our energy towards. So coming back to that sense of normal is digging back into the daily grind, coming back hopefully with some renewed energy, especially off of times of reflection and celebration, renewed energy and dedication to doing the work that's important. For kids, of course, that means getting back into the swing of things, coming to school, trying each day, doing their best to contribute and be part of the community.
I think of the Modim prayer. We thank you, God, for the gifts you give us, not just on Shabbat, not just on the holidays, but morning, noon, and evening, like all day. It's part of making Judaism, living Judaism.
Beautiful. And so much of what happens throughout the course of the year really builds that foundation of why we celebrate and why these peaks and these highlights are so important. So back to that kind of daily, here's why we're here. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we think. Here's what we do as people.
So You have a big event coming up for Tucson Hebrew Academy next Sunday night, Tikkun Olam.
Yes, we do. Very exciting.
We'll talk about that more next week, but just give us a quick highlight.
Sure. We are really pleased to honor the late Don Baker this year, who was tragically killed in a plane accident last school year. Don was one of the founding fathers of the current THA campus, which is this gorgeous facility on River Road by the Jewish Community Center on Federation. And we're really looking forward to honoring Don's legacy. And we have a lot of alumni featured in this event as well. So we're looking forward to a very special and inspiring Tikkun Olam on Sunday, November 6th, actually, coming up next weekend.
Next weekend, and people can go to THA.org to find out more information.
Yep. Lots of news on the website.
Thanks, John. Talk next week.
Sounds great. Thank you.
When we return on To Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Leah's been married for just 2 months. She has her first big fight with her husband. Immediately after, she goes to see her rabbi. "Hi, Leah. Nice to see you again," says Rabbi Levy. "Seems like just yesterday I married you and Arnold under the chuppah. How are you doing?" "That's why I'm here, Rabbi," she replies, starting to cry. "Arnold and I just had an awful fight, just awful." "Don't cry," says Rabbi Levy. "This happens often right after marriage. Please calm down. I think every marriage has to have its first fight sometime." "I know that, Rabbi," says Leah, "but what am I going to do with Arnold's body?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This coming week in Temple, we read the great Torah portion of Noah, the most famous mariner in history, a man who rode out the storm to end all storms in an ark. We know the great tale of Noah is shared, to one degree or another, by other ancient books of lore and legend. Most notably, the Sumerian Epic of Gilgamesh, another guy who had to build a big boat to save humanity. There is just something inherently comic about being stuck on a boat with a large bunch of animals. It's the ridiculous nature of trying to alert the world to imminent catastrophe, plus the impossibility of trying to make a substantive difference in improving human behavior while surrounded by lots and lots of beasts. While we are mostly familiar with the text of Noah itself, God sees that wickedness and corruption have spread throughout the world, that human beings are acting in ways that should have been predictable to an all-knowing deity, lying, cheating, stealing, committing adultery, abusing women publicly, you know, the usual. In response, God decides to destroy the world in a flood. Rain falling for 40 days and nights, the waters of the deep opening up, the whole of humanity drowned in the deluge. One man alone is chosen to survive the flood because, the Torah text tells us, he was righteous in his generation. Noah, Noach in Hebrew, is chosen to carry the banner of humanity to the next generation, gathering his family about him, including his three sons and their wives and his wife, plus two of each animal, plus seven pairs of each kosher animal. Something to eat, something else to sacrifice to God if they survive. Noah builds the ark, loads the boat, and goes on not a 3-hour cruise, but one long enough to float away every trace of the depravity of humanity. Eventually, he sends out first a raven and finally a dove to see if the world is dry enough to land on. That dove brings back a famous olive branch. They land and exit the ark, and life begins again. Noah, we're told, was a righteous man in his generation, but that doesn't necessarily make him a righteous man in every generation. Still, it sets a reasonable standard that any of us can live up to. If we can't necessarily succeed in becoming fully righteous for all time, at least we can strive to be righteous in our own time. Sometimes that very quest may seem absurd, even comical,
but it remains our essential moral legacy. Like Noah, we must try to perfect this challenging and often broken world, whether we do it with an ark or in much smaller, more practical ways, by doing mitzvot and acts of tzedakah. There was a very good, now long forgotten Broadway musical called 2x2, based on this Noah story, and an earlier Clifford Odets play on the theme called The Flowering Peach. That play starred the late Danny Kaye, and this song from that show is about what happens when you finally get off the ark. It's called When It Dries.
We're going to walk a righteous path when it dries. When it dries. Remembering how he vents his wrath when it dries. That when he got mad, we took some bath. When it dries.
The song When It Dries from the old musical 2x2, with music by one of the most successful Broadway composers, Richard Rodgers. Of course, he was Jewish. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Capers Fanay, chief rabbi of the Hebrew-Israelite Board of Rabbis, will share his vision for his movement and reflect a bit on his cousin, Michelle Obama, and what Jewish lessons we can learn from this crazy election season. Find out when we return right here on To Jewish in just a moment. We welcome John Ben Asher, head of school for Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan.
Tell us about THA.
THA is an incredible school, rich community, strong educational culture. We're a K-8 program and Tucson's only Jewish day school.
With small classes, really a tremendous level of individual attention.
Absolutely. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supporting learning environment for kids.
And those kids go on to succeed academically. This isn't just about Jewish identity.
THA graduates go on to Tucson's best high schools, and they are exceptionally well prepared.
And I've seen some of them go to Ivy League schools, some of the best colleges in the country too, if that's important for parents, which I believe it is.
That's right. THA really paves the way for students. A rich, strong academic foundation, as well as Jewish knowledge, learning, and culture.
And great community. How can people find out more about putting their kids in THA?
You can come visit or find us online, thaaz.org, and give us a call, 529-3888.
That's 529-3888, or visit www.thaaz.org.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
When is a public defeat not quite as bad as it seems? When it involves Israel and the United Nations. The UNESCO Executive Committee vote last week to approve a resolution denying any Jewish claim to the Temple Mount on the Western Wall, holiest sites in the world for Jews and at the heart of Jewish religious worship going back 3,000 years, infuriated Jews everywhere, infuriated the State of Israel and many in the U.S. government, and it denied the archaeological record. This atrocious resolution led to major protests on behalf of Israel and in the U.S. Congress. And this week, another UNESCO panel, the World Heritage Committee, nonetheless voted for another Palestinian-sponsored resolution aimed at denying the Jewish connection to Jerusalem, the Western Wall, and the Temple Mount. Its passage eventually led to the recall of Israel's ambassador to UNESCO in protest. But there is more to the story. Through careful preparation, the resolution that passed the World Heritage Committee was considerably less anti-Israel and did less denying of the profoundly deep Jewish connection to the Kotel and the Temple Mount than the annual resolutions they've been passing all along at UNESCO. And instead of passing by consensus, it narrowly passed in a secret vote without a majority. Israel always knew it would lose the vote at the World Heritage Committee meeting in Paris on the resolution ignoring Jewish ties to the Temple Mount. So the Israelis worked instead to ensure that the text was as benign as possible, and it passed with minimal support. Symbolic but important victories. The Palestinians and Jordanians who submitted the resolution thought they had a slam dunk. Then the meeting started, and Tanzania and Croatia called for a secret ballot, and things didn't go the way the Arabs planned. Kind of like how it works when they go to war. Arab countries on the committee, led by Lebanon, with the help of Cuba, attempted and ultimately failed to push forward a consensus motion. The vote that followed was not consensus.
and on a less contentious text than the one the committee usually approves. The World Heritage Committee of UNESCO votes annually on Jerusalem so that it can reaffirm its placement on the list of endangered World Heritage Sites. Among the critical differences was the restoration of the Jewish terms of reference for the Western Wall, the Kotel. In past resolutions, it had been in quotation marks or parentheses, like it wasn't really a Western Wall, with the text referring to the holy Jewish site only by its Muslim name, the Barak Wall. There were also fewer references to the Temple Mount's Muslim name of Haram al-Sharif, and only one statement that it is a Muslim holy site. The 2016 World Heritage Committee text spoke once of Israeli occupation authorities, but dropped 10 other references to Israel as an occupying power. In the end, only Arab states on the committee, plus Cuba and Vietnam, supported the resolution. We succeeded in surprising them at the last minute, Israel's ambassador to UNESCO, Carmel Shammah Cohen, said. Credit for this is due to the foreign ministry and the prime minister's office. A small victory against a ridiculous UN-UNESCO regime.
Well, I wish I was a catfish swimming in a deep blue sea. I would have all your good looks.
Phil Chess, who with his brother Leonard founded Chess Records, the storied Chicago label that captured great blues musicians like Muddy Waters in their prime and helped power the musical fusillade of rock and roll with vibrant recordings by Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and many others. Phil Chess died last week here in Tucson. He was 95 years old.
Deep down in Louisiana, close to New Orleans, way back up in the woods among the evergreens, there stood a log cabin made of earth and wood, where lived a country boy named Johnny B. Good.
Chess Records was one of the most prominent of the independent labels, like Atlantic in New York and Sun in Memphis, that became successful in the 50s, finding unknown or little-known performers, recording them, and convincing radio stations, sometimes with bribes, to play their records. Their goal was profit, but their lasting influence was suggested by the first ballot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which consisted almost entirely of artists who recorded for independent labels like Chess Records. Chess Records was best known for recruiting black musicians who had taken their heartbreak, hopes, blues, and a few harmonicas from the South to Chicago, and with electric guitars and a backbeat gave birth to what became known as Chicago Blues. In addition to Muddy Waters, this roster included Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter, Sonny Boy Williamson, and many other Chicago Blues stars.
Oh, smokes that lightning, shining just like gold. Why don't you hear me cry?
The rosters of Chess and its subsidiary labels also included doo-wop groups, jazz musicians like Ramsey Lewis, gospel singers like a young Aretha Franklin, and many others. Chuck Berry sometimes stayed overnight at Phil Chess's house, sharing a room with his son Terry, and musicians attended the Chess's son's bar mitzvahs. The Chess brothers may have been motivated by financial considerations, but virtually no one disputes that they helped document some of America's most important music. When the Chicago Sun-Times asked Phil Chess in 1997 why he had been so successful, he shrugged. "I didn't know what I was doing," he said. "I just listened." Indeed he did. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. Play in our guest, a song used at his inauguration as chief rabbi, Desmond Decker's song, The Israelites.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed. Oh, me Israelites,
we're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Capers Funeh is rabbi and spiritual leader of Beth Shalom B'nai Zakein Ethiopian Hebrew Congregation in Chicago and is the chief rabbi of the Hebrew Israelite community in America. Is it America or also other parts of North America? I should ask. I don't even know.
Not only America, but it's also we have a couple of congregations in the Caribbean.
Right.
And we have several congregations in Nigeria, And we have communities that we're developing relationships with now in South Africa, the Limba community, as well as we've reached out, and I work very closely with my good friend, who's a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Gershom Sumuzu.
Yes, another past guest of Too Jewish, I should know.
Okay, so that he's a dear friend of mine. As a matter of fact, he was with us in New York for the inauguration.
In your inaugural speech, you talked about the need for halacha for the Ethiopian Hebrew community. Tell us a little bit of American... well, I guess not just American. The Hebrew Israelite community, I guess all over the world. Tell us about what Jewish law looks like currently for the Hebrew Israelite community and what you think should happen.
Well, primarily Jewish law, as it's practiced in our communities today, as I said, a little, ranges between what would be viewed as very orthodox to conservative. Many of the congregations have a mikitsa. Some of the congregations, women are not counted in the minyan. Other congregations, women are counted in the minyan. The idea of the dietary laws is observed throughout the congregations in the community. So that the dietary laws are there. The issues of the role of women is one area that I'm an egalitarian, and so the eventuality is I would like to see women welcome to our board as full members, and women counted in the minions of our various congregations. That's one of the main steps that I would like to take, and then I want to institute a process, the halakhic process, for people becoming a part of the community. I think that that process, as I've read in throughout all of my studies, it's not labeled orthodox or conservative or reformed. It's simply halakha. And so the idea of study, the idea of hatafat dam brit, or brit milah for a man, and then immersion in a mikvah, for and before a bet din, and being quizzed by the members of that bet din, I think is a way for the community to remove some of the questions about the various congregations by other Jewish organizations or Jewish individuals, rabbis, for instance. When I'm a member of the community, I might travel to a different city and attend a synagogue. And the rabbi would say, well, are you Jewish? I want the person to be able to answer unequivocally yes, and be entitled to all the rights that that community would offer to any Jew that's a member there or that is a guest in their particular community.
It is clear from your statements that you're a very strongly pro-Israel Zionist rabbi, that you believe the BDS movement is kind of awful. Tell us about the general tenor of the response within the Hebrew Israelite community in terms of the relationship with Israel and the responses to some of the challenges Israel is facing now.
The responses that I get from my remarks, some of the more, should I say, more nationalist Israelites were saying, kind of taken aback, and they said, well, you know, Rabbi, what about the Palestinians? I said, being for Israel does not mean that we are against Palestinians. But I did explain to them that this BDS movement, this boycott, divestment, and sanctions, is something that I think is going to hurt Israel, hurt the people of Israel, the Jewish people, not only in the state of Israel, but worldwide. I mean, we see the rise of anti-Semitism as was demonstrated in France, and I think there's still tinges of it in France and other parts of the world, even in England. And who knows, God knows where else we've seen anti-Semitic acts and actions against Jewish people rising up. And I am a Jew, first and foremost, and I believe in Judaism, and I believe as a Jew, that we have a responsibility to be strong supporters for the existence of the state of Israel. It is the Jewish state, and I firmly believe that. And as I tried to explain, it does not matter if the rabbinut says, "Oh, well, we don't even know them, we don't acknowledge them." I'm not a Jew because the rabbinut said I'm a Jew.
Yeah, that's okay. They say the same thing to the people we convert in the Reform movement. So
okay, and also some who convert in the conservative movement.
That's correct, of course.
That type of comment, I feel that with the growth of our community, with its level of observance, that before long, our community will be recognized throughout the Jewish world as a part and parcel of Am Yisrael, that we are a part of the people of Israel. And I specifically spoke to an issue in one of the platform issues of the Black Lives Matter movement, where the only country that was sanctioned in their particular platform was the state of Israel. And that disturbed me greatly. Because there are human injustices in cultures and countries throughout this world, and simply to signal out Israel and call Israel an apartheid state and things of this nature, I strongly disagree with, and had to make that known. And that is the position of the Hebrew Israelite community.
So now I have to ask the question. Your cousin is Michelle Obama. She's been extremely active in this campaign. Has she called you for any advice?
She's not called for any advice. I'm delighted to see the activity and the level of activity that that the president and the first lady have involved themselves. I must be very frank with you, Rabbi. I'm going to be doing a program for Kristallnacht at one of the synagogues here, a community-wide program. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you that some of the rhetoric that I've heard during this campaign frightens me. It frightens me because in 1932, 1933 in Germany, it started out with that same type of hateful rhetoric. As who are we blaming for where we are and what we don't have, and then in 1939 it erupted into the Night of Broken Glass, and synagogues and books of Jewish learning were burned, and people thought that that was okay, and we have to get beyond individuals that would use a speech of hate to try to mobilize one segment of our society against the other segments of our society.
I want to thank Rabbi Capers-Fanay for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you and about the Hebrew Israelite community?
Two places. They can visit Beth Shalom, BZ.org. And that will take you to our congregation. And they can also visit blackjews.org. That is the main website for the community at large. And we certainly invite guests to visit us on Shabbat services in Chicago. Our services begin at 10:30 every Shabbat morning. Erev Shabbat services are at 7 p.m. And so guests are welcome. And we always are looking for guests that come in from other parts of the Jewish community. And again, as I said, people who are simply spiritual seekers, to invite them in to say, you are welcome to experience Judaism here with us.
It's a great message across the board. Thank you so much.
Rabbi, I deeply appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best.
To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Ilan Carr, past Supreme Master of Alpha Epsilon Pi Fraternity, talking about Jewish fraternities on college campuses today. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at the TooJewishRadio.com website. Friend us on Facebook. Our playout this morning comes from the Israeli Moshav band. It's called Breishit, for the beginning of the reading of Torah, which we started yesterday. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim, et ha-shamayim.
Sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.